Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to August's Small Animal Practice Club webinar. I'm delighted to introduce to you our speaker for today, lecturer in Small Animal Surgery at the Royal Veterinary College, University of London, Linda Rutherford. Thank you, Linda. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Great. Hi, everyone. Hopefully everyone can hear me. As Sammy said, I'm one of the soft tissue surgeons at the Royal Vet College, and we're going to talk about skin grafts today. Definitely feel free to ask any questions and I'll do my best to answer them as I go along, or just remind me at the end. Okay, so we'll make a start. So I was going to just go over what is a skin graft and some indications about when to use it. Just talk a little bit about the theory about how skin grafts work, because that really helps me to remember that when I'm using this technique, and sort of helps me with the management of them. Just talk about different types of skin graft. We'll briefly talk about wound management and how we prepare a site for a skin graft, then go through surgical techniques and post-operative care, and then talk about some complications and things that we want to try and avoid, and then finish off by going through some case examples. Okay, so skin graft, it's also known as a free skin graft or a mesh skin graft, is the most common one that we use in the veterinary world. It's basically a piece of epidermis that's completely removed from one site and transferred to the recipient site. So this donor skin has no vascular or nervous supply. It's actually very, very thin, and it will have to receive all its nutrition from the recipient site, so from the wound bed. So I found this quote, which I quite liked and sums it up quite well, I think. A graft is a piece of skin which is dead, which you put on and it may later come to life. A flap is a piece of skin which is alive when you put it on and it may die later. So grafts and flaps are very different fundamentally. So a skin flap is a vascularized piece of living skin that you transfer to a donor site. So these are things like our axial pattern flaps, which have a cutaneous artery, vein and nerve in it. And usually the recipient site and the donor site are next to each other or close, and skin grafts are usually the donor site is further away from the recipient site. So commonly the donor site is somewhere on like on the flank or on the trunk, and the recipient sites are at the extremities. So the indications for skin graft or if there has been major loss of skin, so often traumatic things like road traffic accidents, or in some cases tumor removal. As I said just now, usually the only place I ever really apply skin grafts is the distal extremities, so on the limbs, and this is because most other areas in cats and dogs we can actually manage with a flap, which is much simpler and more likely to succeed than a skin graft. Other sort of rough rules for choosing a skin graft would be a wound that's greater than 180 degrees, so half the circumference of the limb, and often we consider using skin grafts for smaller wounds than that if they're over joints, because we don't want the skin over joints to heal by contraction, because that will lead to loss of function, so the joints will be less mobile than they should be. So the other thing to think about if you're considering a skin graft is you really need to be able to immobilize the donor, the recipient site, for the post-operative period. So it needs to not move at all. And normally to do this, you need to immobilize the joint above and below the skin graft. So that also helps you to consider where the sort of best areas to skin graft are. Okay, so this was just a little bit of theory behind the skin grafts. And as I said, I like to sort of keep this in the back of my mind and think about it when I'm using skin grafts so I can try and maximize the potential for the graft to take. So it's really about how the graft receives its nutrition. So I will just find my arrow here, hopefully. So this is the graft. So you can see it's a piece of epidermis, and all the vessels have been severed. Then this is the donor site. So normally this will be an area of healthy granulation tissue. So at first, for the first sort of 48 hours after the graft placement, this piece of skin receives nutrition from the wound fluid by a process called a plasmic imbibition. And then the second stage is the little capillaries from the wound bed start to grow through and into the graft, and the graft capillaries also start branching out, and but the graft is still receiving its nutrition from the wound fluid at this stage, and that can be sort of up to 78 hours after placement. And the third stage, when the graft has taken and has will hopefully become more robust, is when the capillaries from the recipient site have grown into the graft site here. And that can it does happen quite slowly, and the capillary ingrowth takes about only occurs at 0.5 millimeter per day, and that's another reason why it's so important that the piece of skin that you use for the skin graft is as thin as possible, and we'll talk about that shortly. So the sort of limitations of skin grafting, it is quite a time-consuming process, so you need to prepare the donor site adequately, which can take quite a lot of wound management, and it does require prolonged aftercare. So normally these patients will need to be in a bandage for about in a sort of immobilization bandage for about 10 days postoperatively. Then they'll need a lighter dressing for a further few weeks. It can end up being expensive because they need sedations or general anesthetics to facilitate the dressing changes, and the dressing materials itself can be quite expensive. The results can be disappointing, so we often end up with sort of sparser hair cover, and the hair can be different if you've taken it, say, from the flank of quite a long-haired animal and place it on the limb. They can end up with long hair on the limb, and so the cosmetic outcome can sometimes be different to what we would expect, particularly if we've managed to, if we could have used something like a flap, then you may have a better cosmetic outcome. It is one of those things. So if you need to do a graft, you just need to have a good conversation with the owner, try to manage their expectations, try and maybe have some photos available so that the owner knows what to expect. And obviously, well, often we have to do grafts in these cases that have got large degloving wounds and they have sort of no skin on the distal extremities. So sometimes a graft is the only other option compared to amputation. And we've got some pictures of skin grafts coming up later on. So just going to talk quickly now about the different types of skin graft. So the most common one that we use in the veterinary world is a full thickness mesh skin graft. So this is a little photo example of a graft that has just been placed here. So you can see you can see that the donor skin has been stretched across the wound bed. Sorry, just getting my arrow. Has been stretched across the wound bed, and you can see that there's granulation tissue coming through the meshes which have been cut into the graft, and that is on distal extremity of a dog. So basically, a full thickness mesh graft is the entire dermal layer with the epidermis. The advantages to this technique is it's fairly robust compared to some of the other grafts, and it will give the best functional and cosmetic results because adnexal dermal tissue, such as hair follicles and sweat glands, are also transferred with the skin. The other advantage is you don't need any specialized equipment to do it, and the meshes which are cut into the graft allow drainage. So we'll talk about these things later, but one of the sort of main reasons why grafts fail is if too much fluid accumulates beneath the wound bed and the skin graft and basically stops the capillary ingrowth that we talked about. One of the main disadvantages of this graft is because it's a thicker piece of skin, it does have greater nutritional needs. I think that in dogs, you can hope that about it's sort of normal for about 70% of a graft to take, and in cats, you can hope for a little bit higher, so maybe sort of up to 90% of the area of the skin graft should take if you haven't had any major complications. So the other types of skin graft that you may come across are split thickness grafts. So I must admit that I have never used these myself personally, but these are the ones that are commonly used for people. So they basically take some epidermis and variable thicknesses of the dermis. You need specialized equipment to do this, such as a dermatome, which slices the donor site and makes it split thickness. They're very fragile, and that's one of the reasons why we don't tend to use them in our patients, especially because the areas that we're grafting are the sort of distal extremities of the limbs. And obviously, yeah, dogs and cats are pretty active, and will, these sort of thinner split thickness grafts are more likely to not be as robust in the future. They can have less hair growth, and they don't have sort of the sweat glands and as many sweat glands and things like that. So they are probably less functional. The main advantage is that they have a lower nutritional requirement, so it's more likely that a greater percentage of the graft will take. It is not possible to do split thickness grafts in cats due to the thinness of their skin. Okay, so then just moving on, just talking about different types of full thickness skin grafts. So you may have come across these terms: a pinch graft, punch, stamp, or strip graft. And hopefully you can see from that diagram there that they're just different shapes of donor pieces of skin. They can be quite useful, and they can, help with re-epithelialization of large areas of granulation tissue. They're often a little bit simpler to form to perform than a mesh graft. And say if you did punch grafts, you will have multiple small punches. It doesn't matter if not all of the punches take. The donor sites are very small and heal quickly, and because the donor site is small, you can actually perform it under sedation with some local. Most of the management for these types of full thickness skin grafts are the same as the full thickness mesh graft, and we'll cover them in a bit. So this slide was just really to show you punch graft, how you would do a punch graft, and I find this technique to be really useful for sort of wounds on the distal extremities that have taken a really, really long time to heal. You've sort of got to the stage where you've been waiting sort of 6 weeks or so. The granulation tissue bed hasn't changed, it's not infected, but it's just not getting any smaller. So as I said, you can do this under sedation. So you basically use a circular skin biopsy punch to take the little punch segments out, and I usually use 6 or 8 millimeters, something like that. And you can see here, this is, I'll just get my arrow, sorry, this is the donor site. B is the donor site, and you can see that the skin biopsy is just taking the little punches of skin, and then here the subcutaneous fat is removed because again you just want the epidermis, and then Oh, sorry, this is actually the wound bed. So this is supposed to represent granulation tissue, and little punches of granulation tissue have been removed, and then these donor punches of skin are placed into the granulation tissue. And on the next slide, we have a picture from a textbook. Sorry, didn't have any photos to hand to show you of a dog that had chronic granulation tissue wound that just wasn't epithelializing anymore. So you can see in number C, they have put in lots of little punches of skin, and then in E, you can see that the most of the punches have sort of taken, and you've got this paler tissue, which is new epithelial tissue, which is actually, it is a scar tissue, but it is as a form of skin. And then you can see here, this is 10. About 20 days after the surgery, and the wound has actually healed. I mean, it's not really the prettiest of wounds, but it has skin covering it now, and obviously that should be have good the same function as normal skin, just not as cosmetically pleasing. And that was sort of what I was trying to mean about discussing with the owners beforehand what sort of results you can expect. Okay, just wondered, does anyone have any questions so far? Okay, just feel free to type them in, and I'll get to them as we go along. I'll do my best to get to them as we go along. So now I just wanted to talk a little bit about wound management and how you would prepare the wound site for a skin graft. So essentially, it's just sort of standard wound management, and the main principles of wound management are decontamination, debridement, control of infection, and you're aiming really to establish a healthy granulation tissue bed. Now, there's really a lot to cover for this one webinar, but I'll be happy to answer any specific questions on wound management if you have any. In my experience, I've found that the skin grafts have worked best when I have placed them onto a healthy granulation tissue bed. It is possible to do a free skin graft directly onto a surgical wound. So, say, for example, you have removed a tumour from a distal extremity, and you don't want to manage it as an open wound at first. I have done this a couple of times, and whilst areas of the graft have been successful, ultimately more sort of the graft. A larger area of the graft has failed than if I've done it on a healthy granulation tissue bed. So I'll often use a combination of sort of wet to dry dressings, a leave-in and IntraSight, and sometimes honey, depending on the state of the wound. And it's one of those things where you need to be patient, and you need to sort of just keep on top of things, do regular bandage changes, keep monitoring, and hopefully you will start to see granulation tissue forming. So here's an example. So you can see this wound on the distal extremity of a dog, and you can see that there is some tendon visible in the first picture. And then in the second one, they've been managing it for quite a while, and there's a healthy bed of granulation tissue. So the sort of hallmarks that you're looking for is this really nice bright red colour. It's quite sort of moist looking, very vascular, and this sort of type of wound bed really give you the best chance of your skin graft being successful. So I wanted to just go over when would I consider placing a graft. So I think once I had a nice granulation tissue bed like this one, I would consider doing a graft, and that is very variable depending on the state of the wound initially. So that could take weeks, or it could take weeks to nearly a month. So when you want to try and time the graft correctly, you want to try and have your wound that's free of major debris and isn't infected. As I said, healthy granulation tissue, I think, is the sort of best thing to graft onto, and I've had my best results using healthy granulation tissue beds. Great. So if there is some references in JSAP where they have grafted straight onto a surgical site. I think there was a JSAP article in 2012. So if you were considering that, that would be something to look up before you did it. Essentially, you perform the skin graft in the same way, but you're just placing the graft straight onto where the surgical site where the tissue's been removed from. So I wanted to go through now the surgical steps and how you actually perform a skin graft. So we're going to start off by talking about the donor site and where to collect the graft from. So ideally, you want an area that you can close easily with no tension. And often in our cats and dogs, we use the thoracic or abdominal skin, and it's hard to see with the drapes, but this is from that area, and I've got a photo later on to show you where ideal donor site is. So what I usually do is once I've got the healthy bed of granulation tissue for the graft site, I'll use something to create a template. So often a surgical swab will work really well, and you can sort of lightly debride the wound site so it's minimally bleeding, then use the swab to get an impression of the wound on with the blood onto the swab. Sounds a little bit gruesome. Then I basically use this as a template and draw that out using a surgical pen on the recipient site. And then I always add about a centimetre to a centimetre and a half all around the circumference of the skin that needs to be removed for the graft. The next stage is to basically try and dissect the dermis and the epidermis from the subcuticular tissue and the panniculus muscles. So remember that we basically want as thin a piece of skin as possible, and we're not interested in the blood supply to the skin, which is in the panniculus muscle. Sort of a really good tip is that you want to handle the skin graft, so the donor, as little as possible. So you don't want to use forceps and traumatic things like that on it, because you'll create little bruises. So hopefully you can just see in this picture that we've got stay sutures so that we don't need to handle the skin. And if you use stay sutures, it can create tension. It can really help you to debride the fat and subcutaneous tissue away from the skin graft. As we talked about before, the pinch grafts or punch grafts are sort of done in the same way, where you either use a skin biopsy for a skin biopsy punch, or you just pinch up a little bit of skin and cut it off, with scissors or a blade for the pinch grafts. So graft preparation, which is really an essential sort of part of the surgery, and there's several ways to do it. So in this photo, you can see that there's a cork board, and the donor skin has been pegged out using hypodermic needles, and then they're using sharp dissection to remove the subcuticular tissue. I prefer to use a number 11 blade, and I change the blade like very frequently, and you're basically scraping off all the fat, and you want the skin graft to be as thin as possible, and it should have this cobblestone appearance where you start to see the hair follicles coming through, and if you held it up to the light, you should be able to see through it. Now, at this stage, don't worry at all if you accidentally make some small holes in it, because the next stage of preparing the donor skin is to mesh it anyway. So here's another example. You can see that the stay sutures have been placed on the edges of the donor skin, and we're actually using, this is my preferred method, you actually use a piece of bandage to roll the skin graft onto you and create tension, and then using a fine blade to scrape as you go. Okay. So here is the graft that has been pegged out again, and we're just using a number 11 blade to create meshes, which are literally just little slits cut into the graft. And as I said before, it doesn't matter if you when you're preparing the graft by taking off the fat, if you accidentally make some small holes, that doesn't matter at all. And hopefully you can see this piece of skin is got that sort of cobblestone appearance. It looks quite bumpy, and you can see that in some areas you can actually see through to the board underneath. Okay. And here's another example of doing the mesh. So they actually have a special little plastic board that you can cut onto. However, I find using the bandage that you use to create tension actually quite a useful tool to create the meshes as well. Okay, so we're going to talk quickly about the recipient bed management. So this is the wound that we're going to be grafting onto. So before you actually place the graft, you want to just freshen up the granulation tissue. So you want to remove all the epithelialized borders, so normally cut about sort of between sort of 2 and 5 millimeters, as close as you can around from the whole wound edge, and use a number 11 blade to do this, or number 15. You want to remove any crusts or dead tissue, and you don't want the granulation tissue bed to be bleeding. So often what I'll do is prepare the granulation tissue and then place a soaked swab that's been soaked in ice cold saline from the freezer onto the wound bed whilst I'm getting the donor skin ready. Often, if I'm doing it onto granulation tissue, I will remove the top layer of granulation tissue, and this is because it is a layer where lots of bacteria will live. So to basically freshen it up, I'll get a blade and really, really scrape the surface, or I've completely debrided it. And as I said before, the ice cold saline can be really helpful to stop any of those little bleeders. But you really don't want to place your skin graft if the wound bed is bleeding a lot, because it will increase the distance between the graft and the wound bed, and maybe make it more likely to fail. Okay, so the other thing is you really do need to be sort of quite quick with this surgery, and you want to aim to harvest the graft and place it on the wound bed within 20 minutes. And this is just to really cut down the time that the skin isn't receiving any nutrition at all. The other thing is you really want to stretch the donor skin out so that there's good contact between the donor skin and the recipient bed. I usually place skin sutures, although you can use skin staples. And ideally, I would use a monofilament non-absorbable suture such as nylon. What I usually do is sort of peg out the skin graft, if you like, and I put some strategic sutures sort of at the corners of the wound, and then I fill in the sutures in the middle. I also always try and match the direction of the hair growth. So on the leg, normally the hairs are pointing down, just to try and get as good a cosmetic result as possible. So here is a close-up example of a skin graft that's been placed over the hock of a cat. So you can see that there's granulation tissue peeking through the meshes, and that we have some strategic sutures placed throughout the skin graft, but the majority of them are at the edges of the skin, and the edges of the wound have been freshened up beforehand. Okay, so to close the donor site, you just close it as you would with any other sort of surgical wound, and close in the direction of the tension lines, and usually I close in 2 to 3 layers, so something in the subcut and then in the skin itself. It is important to sort of close that as neatly as possible, because I've certainly had some owners that have also been disappointed or perhaps concerned about the size of the donor site. So obviously you want to make that as nice a job as possible. So that brings me on to talk about causes of skin graft failure and how to manage them in the post-operative period. Oh, we've got a question coming in, and someone wants to know the difference, if there's any difference between cats and dogs for the surgery. And I would say fundamentally there isn't any difference between how you actually perform the surgery in cats and dogs. Ultimately, as I sort of mentioned before, I think that skin grafts are normally little or a little bit more likely to be successful in cats. And I think that's due to the thickness of the skin. So, although it's still a full thickness skin graft in cats, it's a thinner piece of skin. So, ultimately, the requirement for nutrition is slightly less. And I would sort of hope in cats to achieve sort of 80 or 90% survival of the graft, whereas in dogs, if I've got sort of realistically about 50 to 70%, I'm usually quite happy. Okay, so the main causes of skin graft failure are when the graft, so the piece of skin that you've placed on the wound, separates from the wound bed. And the main reasons that this happen are infection or movement. So, sort of another, if lots of fluid accumulate between the graft and the wound, that causes separation. And the reasons why you get fluid accumulation are seroma, hematoma, or exudation with infection. So they're sort of the same thing. So it's either movement or fluid buildup, really. So you do need to be careful with your surgery and try not to place the graft if you've got lots of bleeding, or just be careful with your hemostasis to try and avoid hematoma formation. With the mesh skin graft, it's unlikely that you're going to get seroma formation, and that's one of the advantages of having those little meshed holes. And as we briefly talked about, you want to try and time your graft when the wound is no longer infected, so hopefully you minimize the risk of infection. So, and that brings me on to just talk about the post-operative care. So it is absolutely essential that your skin graft is completely immobilized for the first sort of 2 weeks, I would say. And to do that, you really need to immobilize the joints above and below the graft. There's various ways of doing that. Usually, I'll use a modified Robert Jones bandage, or sometimes a splinted bandage. And rarely, depending on the injuries, you could consider placing an external skeletal fixator to sort of achieve immobilization. The ESFs can be quite useful as well because they're quite helpful to anchor the bandages around. So for the modified Robert Joneses, I usually do use cotton wool and apply your sort of three layers, and make sure that you have a good amount of tension on it. So if we remember back to our diagram of graft nutrition, any movement of the graft at all in the first 7 days will sever any of those little capillary buds that are growing in, and ultimately lead to graft failure. So the dressings are quite important, and the primary layer, so the contact layer that's next to the skin, is really important. So usually I use this product called Gelinet, which is basically a paraffin gauze, so a meshed material with paraffin or sort of a Vaseline type substance. And this is basically really to stop the donor site sticking to the dressing. Then on top of the Gelinet, I'll use an absorbent layer. So usually I'll use a leave-in just to try and wick any fluid that is forming from the wound bed away from the skin graft. So again, we increase our chances of the graft taken. And then I will After I've got the gel net and the leave-in and the surgical sites completely covered, I will then place the modified Robert Jones normally, you know, with the cotton wool layers. And quite often I will use a splint. Sometimes I will consider putting a waterproof outer layer on, and something that I find to be quite useful is Opsite, so those adherent semi-permeable permeable dressings that you can use during surgery. So I usually do that if I'm worried that the patient's going to sort of urinate on the bandage. So say a pelvic limb in a cat or something like that. You could use cling film, which is easier to change. Opsite is very sticky, so once it's on, that's you know it in place until you change the whole dressing. But it is better if the bandage you know can be a little bit breathable. It's just something to think about. And I think if you think that the patient's going to urinate on it, then you may want to consider a waterproof dressing. Okay, so the dressing changes. It's really, really important that there's absolutely no movement of the graft. So usually I will do at least the first two dressings under a general anaesthetic. So usually I do my first dressing change between days 5 to 7 postoperatively, unless something has happened to the dressing, such as it slipped or something like that. I think I was just asking myself a question then. If my patient urinated on the bandage early doors, I may be tempted to try and leave it until sort of 5 to 7 days, because the first few days are so important to not have any movement between the graft and the wound bed. Then usually after the first bandage change, the second one is about 10 days postoperatively. And then once the graft has been in place for about 2 weeks, then I will change to a lighter dressing, but I usually keep the graft covered for about 3 to 4 weeks. It is important to remember that the nervous supply to the graft takes quite a long time to develop, so that is, you know, any time up to 6 weeks. And whilst that's happening, the patient could have some sort of strange sensations in the graft, like tingling and things like that. So it's very important that the patient isn't allowed access to the site, so they do wear a buster collar for a prolonged length of time to try and stop sort of self-mutilization of the graft. Another tip is to use saline to try and soak off the primary layer, so the alevin and the gelinet, and you can use sort of DeBakey forceps to peel it off gently, because again, you don't want any movement of the graft site, so you just need to be sort of as careful as possible. Okay, so here is a little photo of a cat that has had a skin graft on its back leg, and we have this cat, a series of photos of this cat later on. But it was really just to show you the sort of size of the bandage. So it's got its modified Robert Jones on here, and then the skin graft was distal to the hock, but you can see that we've immobilized the leg. Including the stifle. And here is the donor site. So this is what I was saying, you know, it's quite a large site, although that should heal, you know, very well. It can be something that owners get a little bit of a fright when they see. So just bear that in mind and try and explain that to the owner before you do the surgery. Okay, so I just wanted to talk about sort of what things you can expect with your dressing changes. So days 1 to 3, the skin graft itself can often look quite engorged in the edematous, and this is because it's gaining its nutrition through imbibing the wound fluid, and so the graft can look quite dark in colour. So you know, don't feel too worried when you see it like that. By around day 7, the graft should look less edematous and pinker, so we should start having our vascular ingrowth at this point. And after about 2 to 3 weeks, you might actually you'll start seeing some hair growth. So hopefully everyone can hear me a bit better. I'm sorry about the internet connection. So in This slide was a little chihuahua about 7 days post-op. So this little dog had been in an RTA and ended up with degloving injuries to both her pelvic limbs. We had performed a skin graft here because the proximal wound was sort of the full circumference of her leg. So I was quite happy with this graft at this stage. Hopefully you can see that the majority of the skin graft is quite pink in colour, and there's very minimal exudate. You can see that around the edges, if I just get the pointer, around the edges there are some darker areas, and this is where I actually overlapped the skin graft with the edge of the skin. You can see in this area there is a little bit of the graft has pulled away slightly from the wound edge, and this area hasn't taken very well, but it's actually very small. And this wound we just grafted because, I was doing a skin graft in the same area. This wound probably would have been fine to heal by secondary intention. So we've got a question coming in. Someone said it looks like there's some purulent discharge where it didn't take, and would I consider using antibiotics? So I agree, like in this little area here, there is a little bit of discharge. It's very minimal, and usually when the grafts are infected, it's really quite obvious when you change the dressing, you're getting a lot of discharge on your alevins and things like that. Usually, the cases have been on antibiotics for a period of time before the skin graft while we're doing open wound management. So, it's not, I would say normally they are on a sort of broad spectrum, something like amoxicillin, clavulanic acid. If I was concerned about infection at the time of this dressing change, so about 7 days post-op, I would repeat a bacteriology swab. And if I was very concerned, so as I said, there was lots of purulent discharge, so more than we have in this photo, I would possibly consider adding in another antibiotic, so probably something like enrofloxacin, whilst I'm waiting for that swab to come back. But good question. Thank you very much for asking it. So just to recap, I was quite happy with the way this graft's looking at 7 days. We can see that most of it seems to be healthy with nice pink colour, and the little bits of dark tissue are just the way that I did the graft with overlapping with the skin graft to the normal skin. Okay, so this graft, on the other hand, is looking very, very unhealthy. So unfortunately, we can see that there's a lot more necrosis. So we can see the edges of this graft are very, very dark, and then we can see that the center of the graft is ischemic. So it's a very pale sort of grey colour, and you get the impression that the mesh holes are opening up. So unfortunately, most of this graft has, well, the whole of this graft has died. It's difficult. I think that this was probably because of movement between the graft and the wound site. Whilst it is, of course, very, very disappointing, often the wounds will go on to heal after even a failed skin graft because there's often transfer of epithelial tissue, and this can just sort of stimulate wound healing. So whilst obviously it is a complication and the graft ultimately has failed, it may be that this wound goes on to heal without further surgery. So just yeah, the white areas are usually ischemia. Black areas are just further along where the skin grafts become necrotic. And as we were talking about before, if you've got infection, you've usually got, quite a lot of purulent discharge by the time you come to do your dressing change at 7 days. Okay, so this is an example of punch grafts. So This is little Jack Russell with a wound over his hock. So this area is actually new epithelial tissue. So you can see it's paler pink in colour, and that's where the majority of the wound actually healed by second intention. And then this area was sort of chronic granulation tissue that wasn't getting any smaller. So basically just tried to put these little punch grafts in place. And you can see at this stage, this is again about 7 days post-op, that most of the punch grafts are still there, and whilst there is still quite a lot of epithelial tissue, hopefully the punch grafts have taken and will basically act as a source for new epithelial cells to move out from the punch grafts. Okay, and as I said before, the one of the main advantages to the punch grafts are if a few of them don't take, then most of them hopefully will, so you'll still end up with better epithelial coverage than if you hadn't have done the punch grafts. Okay, so now I just wanted to go through some case examples. So we're going to start off with an 8-month-old female boxer who had been involved in a road traffic accident, and she was non-weight bearing on her left pelvic limb. So you can see here she's got quite an extensive injury. You can actually see this is her tibia, and you can see there's that about half of the circumference of the skin has been lost over her hock. And here are her radiographs. So she's got a fracture of her lateral malleolus here and a luxation of her tibia, so torsocrural luxation. So this was after surgery. So she's got crossed K wires here to try and repair the fractures, and you can see that these are radio opaque swabs, so she's had wet to dry bandage placed to start wound management. So here at day 5 we can see we've got quite a lot of granulation tissue growing in now, but we've still got a substantial amount of the tibia showing, and at this stage we've just been managing her with external coaptation. And here we were debriding the wound, so you can see that she's over a tub table and we've been lavaging, and actually to try and encourage granulation tissue over the tibia. Here we've done something called forage, which is where you basically make small drill holes in the bone to encourage bleeding, which should encourage granulation tissue coverage. And you can see here there are still some pale necrotic areas of skin that need to be debrided, but on the whole everything's looking a bit healthier, and there's lots of nice red tissue, which has hopefully got a good vascular supply and hopefully will be healthy. So at day 9 we actually decided to place an external skeletal fixator just really to support the orthopedic repair and also help with the skin graft. So you can see here the ESFs being fitted, and here's just a different view in the first image. You can see that some of the tibia is still visible. So we didn't want to perform the skin graft until we had granulation tissue covering everything. This was by day 15, so you can see that the wound edges. Just get the pointer. The wound edges have epithelialized, so you see this pale pink tissue sort of growing in, and the whole thing is filled up with granulation tissue, which is still quite bright red in color. So at this stage we decided to perform the skin graft. So as I mentioned before, usually with a more chronic wound, I'll use a wet to dry dressing sort of 2 days, 1 or 2 days before I actually apply the skin graft to try and stimulate the granulation tissue and really, not stimulate it, sorry, but really clean it up. So remove that top sort of bacterial film. And you could see that the free skin graft, a free mesh skin graft has been applied. You can see all the little sutures around the edges, and you can see a few strategic sutures in the center, and you can hopefully see that the graft has really been stretched out, so there's good contact between the wound bed and the donor. So, excuse me, here on day 18, so this was I used to do the dressing changes at day 3, but recently I have changed to doing them sort of between 5 and 7 days, just because I think it's less risky to try and minimize any movements between the graft and the donor sites, at that very sort of early fragile stage up to day 5. But at this 3 days post-op, if we just get the arrow. You can see around the edges there is a little bit of necrosis. So you can see the edges where there's overlap have gone quite pale. You can see here there's quite a bit of a pale area, but I guess ultimately that's probably about 30, maybe 30, 20, 30% of the graft at this stage isn't looking too good, but the majority of it is looking nice and pink. Then at day 20, you can see again this area down the bottom is still, unhealthy looking. It's very pale. I don't think we've got an increase in sort of necrosis at the edges. And another good point to mention actually here is that I haven't debrided it at all, so I tend to not do any debridement of the graft until at least 10 days after the surgery. And again, that's because I just don't want to disturb it. I don't want to move the graft at all. I think actually that this area, the distal area where it didn't take so well, might be because there was a bit of a pocket in the wound. So you get the impression here that the donor skin was slightly lifted from the wound bed. Okay, so this is day 25, and we have actually, so 10 days after, and I have debrided it now. So I've removed this necrotic skin from down here, but you can see that the granulation tissue is still really healthy underneath, and that's quite a small area now, only about a centimetre or something. That will ultimately heal by secondary intention. You can see the remainder of the graft looks really healthy. It's a really nice pink color, so I'm pretty pleased with this outcome. And here we go. Here is Holly, the little boxer dog, sort of 50 days post-injury. She's still got the external skeletal fixator on, but it was and you can see that the skin graft has taken quite well. We've got hair growth and it's in the right direction. And this was the area where we had the little bit of necrosis. It still looks like it's epithelial tissue, so all in all, quite a good outcome for her. So, just wanted to show you an example of a free skin graft in a little cat. So, this was a 2-year-old domestic short hair who had a severe degloving injury. So, this is how it looked when she came in with a lot of skin missing from her distal limb. So this was after a period of wound management. So granulation tissue is often slower to happen in cats. So I think this was after about 2 2.5 weeks. We can see that we've got granulation tissue everywhere. I'd say it's absolutely a good component for a skin graft. It's distal to the hock, so no skin flaps are going to reach there. And it's the whole circumference of the leg. The really good thing for this patient is that the digits and the pads are intact, because definitely if we've got dieback of the pads, that it really can be much more problematic. So this was preparing the donor site. So you can see that we've used a pen to mark out where we want, how much skin we want to take, and this is a star just so that we can know which end is which, cranial and caudal, and the hairs are growing down, growing this way, I think, with the arrow like this. Okay. And here we go. This was one of the slides I showed before. So we've used the bandage to create tension and skin sutures, stay sutures, so that I'm not handling the skin and removing all the cuticular tissue here. And here we can see that most of the subcut tissue is staying behind. We've ended up with a very thin piece of skin that we're going to place on the wound bed. And here we are meshing the graft. So you really can see in this one that the skin is so thin it's see-through. Hopefully you might be able to see just down here there's some hair follicles poking through. We're creating the mesh with our 11 blades. Here is the graft once it's been completely meshed. And here it is in place. So this was one of the pictures that I showed you earlier. So the sort of things that you want to achieve there is that the graft is pulled tightly around, so there's good contact between the graft and the recipient site. We've got a few strategic sutures placed throughout the graft, but the majority of sutures are at the edge. We've used monofilament non-absorbable suture. And here, this is the leg from the other side. So you can see it was a circumferential wound. And ultimately, here is the end cosmetic result. So this was 2 weeks after the surgery. You can see that actually it was a bit longer than 2 weeks. Sorry, I think it was about a month after. You can see that the little mesh holes have filled in. So they've got new epithelial tissue, and you can see that the majority of this graft took. There's just a little bit over the hock, which is always quite a tricky area, over the calcaneus, which had to heal by secondary intention. But all in all, I was quite happy with this graft. Okay, great. So that brings us to the end of today's talk. Please let me know if you've got any questions. I've had a few come through that I haven't answered yet, so I'll just answer them now. So someone asked, were there areas that I wouldn't graft? And again, the sort of things that you need to think about are you need to immobilize the area that you've grafted for sort of 2 weeks post-operatively. So you need to think about that, and that means that normally I will only do skin grafts on the distal extremities. And as I said briefly, usually distal to the hock or the carpus, because proximal to the hock or carpus, you can usually think of some other axial pattern flaps which are more robust and simpler to perform than skin grafts that will be useful to close wounds there. And one of the other questions was, when would you decide to place a graft, or when would you decide to leave the wounds to heal by secondary intention healing? So again, it's if the wound is over a joint and you're worried that if you leave the wound to heal by second intention, you'll get contracture and then less function of the joint. So quite a few of the examples that I showed you were over the hock. Or if the skin that's missing is more than about half of the circumference of the leg. Or if you've been managing a wound for a while and you've ended up with static granulation tissue. And for me, for it to be static granulation tissue, it will have to have not changed for at least 6 weeks. And it can be a good plan to take sequential wound photos, so with a ruler, so you can really objectively see if the wound is decreasing in size. And if you think it isn't and you've left it a decent amount of time, then you could consider something simple like the punch grafts, and that will hopefully help stimulate healing and allow you to get the wound to epithelialize more quickly than if you didn't do surgery. Okay, great. Has anyone got any further questions? Great, thank you very much, everyone. I hope I've helped you today, and pleasure, Semi, talking to you all.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Linda for an excellent presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.